The Jay Young Show is a weekly podcast featuring insightful discussions with anyone from big business CEOs, celebrities, to military heroes. Each interview is a personal conversation about business, life, and anything in between. And now, your host, Jay Young.
Hey everybody, Jay Young here at the Jay Young Show. Thank you so much for showing up today. We're going to have a great time. And I tell you, we don't get a lot of people that own franchises, own sports teams. And today we have somebody that owns sports teams, and we're going to show how he went on his journey, where he went, kind of how did this all happen? You know, how can we be like Mr. Brett Johnson? Hey, Brett, how you doing today?
I'm great, Jay. Thanks. Real honor to be on your show. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Man, I tell you, you know, a fellow Tiger member, we're in Dallas. He's in LA. We reached out some of the people because, man, I just love getting to know people in Tiger because, you know, they're so successful. And they have that, man, I'm gonna scale it and sell it mentality. I'm gonna build a business up, I'm gonna sell it, and I'm gonna do some other things in my life that we can do to have fun in life. And but there's a lot on the way or during that journey that, you know, I want to talk about. You know, this show basically is going to the 16 to 20 year olds to look at, hey, you know what? This is what I think I want to do with my life. I'm not really sure 100%, but, you know, if I put your name up and somebody listens to this podcast, which I hope a lot of people will listen to this podcast, with a lot of followers, but when they listen to it, they go, oh, that Brett Johnson, man, I remember that, you know, he said X, Y, and Z, and that's what I want to do, and that's kind of what starts them on a journey, you know. So, Brett, not to put any pressure on you, of course, you know, but let's just talk about basically starting up. I always like to find out, you know, where did you grow up, kind of how did you where did you go to college, and then let's just go there. Let's go to all the way from where you grew up, high school, college, and then before your first job. Where were you? Where did you grow up?
So born and raised in New York City on the Upper East Side. So the mean streets of the Upper East Side have the pleasure of kind of having New York City in my DNA. But now I live in Southern California. But I went to a boarding school in Connecticut, which is fairly typical with the New York City upbringing. I went to a boarding school called Choate in Connecticut. I have an identical twin brother that was with me there. And then from there, we went to Brown in Rhode Island. Brown University, and I like to raise the relevancy of my time in Rhode Island because the image behind me is a Rhode Island-based project. It's a $400+ million professional soccer anchor real estate development, and it's kind of the hallmark of a lot of what I do now, is bringing mixed-use developments around soccer and indoor sports as well, e-gaming, e-sports, et cetera, into what I'll call communities that could really benefit from the social and economic impact that these developments bring.
Wow, that's great. Choate is, world known. I mean, it is, there's a lot of people that say, man, Choate's a great school. What was it back then, or what was the biggest takeaways, or what do you think is, I wouldn't say you're better than anybody else, but what is it that you feel like education-wise or experience-wise that you got out of Choate that you hear from a lot of other people that didn't get that experience?
Yeah, I my twin brother and I are so blessed to have gone to that school. I'm a big advocate of boarding school in general, Choate specifically. I spent 10 years as a trustee. I went off the board a couple of years ago, but very proud of a 10-year commitment to the school as a trustee. My brother and I have set up a scholarship with the school to provide access to the school for you know, those that can't afford it. From my perspective, I came from a very small school in New York City, all boys school, very formal, kind of ties and jacket every day. Going to Choate, the campus is incredible. It's arguably second to none in the boarding school circuit. I mean, two IMPA buildings. You know, when you come into an environment like that, it's like a small liberal arts college. The campus is that good. The quality of the academics is just phenomenal. Mm. And I felt I spent 3 years there. The quality and caliber of the experience, sort of in every regard, athletically, academically, personally, I credit Choate with those 3 years that I was there. with more growth than any 3-year period in my life, and really set me up to go to a school like Brown. Candidly, prior to going to Choate, I wasn't on a track to go to a school like Brown, and 3 years at Choate really set me up not only to get into a school like that, but to thrive at a school like Brown. And so I'm really grateful for it.
Wow, that is awesome, man. I tell you, I've heard a lot of great people and great things about university. So then you went to Brown University, and you said you and your twin brother both went to Brown.
Yeah, we did.
I got to talk about your twin here in a minute. I mean, I'm trying to figure this out, but what did you get your degree in, or what did you study in at Brown?
We were history majors, of all subject matter. But I loved the subject. A professor of mine at Choate was a Brown grad, a history professor of mine at Choate. He had a big influence on my decision to go to that school. And I ultimately always knew that I was going to go into business, but I didn't feel a need to study, you know, if you will, business in college. I didn't feel a need. I knew I would get all of that at a later stage. So Brown had a fantastic history department. And from my perspective, I've got a philosophy relative to education that you need to be able to read and write and speak well. And those are the critical building blocks. Everything else you can learn. And if anyone thinks that they're in school and they know exactly what they're going to do, I think they're naive. You know, candidly, very few people. I mean, yes, of course, there are occasionally people who know that they want to become a doctor, if you will, or a lawyer, if you will. For all the rest of us, we're not quite sure. And so, but what I felt as a grounding is you really got to get kind of those basics correct. And if you have those basics correct, you can go anywhere.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So did your brother graduate the same thing?
Same thing. We played different sports in high school. I played lacrosse. He was on the crew team. He got recruited to row at Brown. And as I describe it, I rode his coattails into Brown. I think the crew thought he could get two for one. So we did that. We really enjoyed it. And my brother and I are very close today. He's partners with me in our family office, which is Benevolent Capital. We're really blessed to kind of work closely with each other. We complement each other well. He's on the East Coast. I'm on the West Coast. He's in Greenwich. I'm in Los Angeles. We're both in YPO. I've been in YPO for 23 years. He joined, I think, about 5 years ago. So a little bit late on that. And at some point, I hope and expect I'll get him into Tiger 21.
Right. Well, that's neat. So are you guys the same personality, same?
We're identical. We've got a lot of similarities. We've got different strengths and weaknesses. You know, and again, that's where we kind of complement each other very well. He's less involved. We focus on Benevolent Capital is really our private equity side, where we raise capital for investments that we like. I'm focused much more on the sports and the real estate side, and then we complement each other on the private equity side. So kind of the breadth and depth of what I focus on a day-to-day basis is a little bit bigger or broader than my twin brothers at this point. But at some point I'll bring him into the tent, because I have too many of these projects. I need his added bandwidth and help. He's particularly strong at raising capital, and good news is I'm in a capital raising mode.
Yeah. So he's more on the capital raising mode. You're more in the operations.
You know, kind of seeing things. I saw the opportunity with professional soccer in Phoenix. I bought a professional soccer team there in the United Soccer League. I've leveraged that now to own 6 clubs around the world, including a prominent club in England called Ipswich. And then I have the development rights in Rhode Island. I own the team in Tucson, a team in Denmark. And then I work closely with the league. I focus on it's the second division in the soccer pyramid in the United States. I mean, most of your listeners are aware of Major League Soccer, MLS. That's the first division. I work with United Soccer League, which is the second and third division in the United States. And it's a fantastic, the quality and caliber of the play is exceptional. And the economic model really lends itself well to bringing it to markets like Rhode Island, bringing it to cities like Tucson. And my entire business plan is predicated on bringing professional soccer, anchoring that asset around mixed use development and being a catalyst for significant social and economic change in those regions. So I'm blessed now with a $3 billion pipeline across the country of these real estate projects. And a lot of them are focused in opportunity zones. So, you know, for private investors, they get to leverage that program with capital gains. And then they all have public support. So either some form of land and or tax credits or tax increment financing are almost a requisite in terms of public support that's necessary to really make these projects a complete success.
Hmm. Wow. Okay, good, good, good. You know, so the sports was your second, your first, when you got out of college in, at Brown, did you and your brother go to work for the same company?
No, no, no. Okay. We both ended up in San Francisco. Kind of, I think growing up in New York City, we neither one of us wanted to go work on Wall Street. Maybe I should say it differently. We didn't mind working on Wall Street, but we wanted to do it in the Bay Area. So we had a stint actually where we were both at Montgomery Securities in San Francisco. He was there a lot longer than I was. I ended up spending 2 years working in private equity with Leo Hendry, and he's an incredible mentor, very successful CEO and deal maker. Ultimately, Leo was the CEO of TCI, the big cable company, and then he was the CEO of Yes Network, Yankee Entertainment Sports. But I worked for Leo for several years, learned a ton. I pivoted and joined a fast-growing computer accessory company called Targus. At one point, it was the biggest global computer accessory company focusing on mobile computer accessories, you know, the ubiquitous black carrying cases that a lot of people of a certain age are familiar with. I ran all the international business out of London for 5 years. And that really gave me, as I describe it, a front row seat in professional soccer, which led me to where I am today, inspired me. And then I was brought back by the PE firm to run the whole company. That brought me to Southern California. I ran it for 5 years. We sold the business in 2005, and that's when I started Benevolent Capital, which is grants of mine, my twin brothers and my family office. We've used Benevolent Capital as a platform to make private equity, venture capital, real estate, and now professional sports investments.
I got you. Okay. So everything was with working with the franchise in sports, you felt out, maybe I could do this. I love it. You had the liquidity event, then you started Benevolent Capital 2005, and then you and your brother just, because you also own a lot of real estate. Is it real estate without sports, or is it, there's some real estate?
Our initial real estate had nothing to do with sports. We had a couple partners of ours that went to Brown with us, where we developed a fair bit of real estate in the Charlottesville market, where they were from originally. And then all of our private equity investments, we find something that we like. We always put our own money into it. We set up SPV. So we'll put our own capital, and then we don't charge management fees. And we provide a very, very healthy preferred return to our LPs before we take a promote. So in short, Jay, unless our private equity investments do really well, we don't do well. I from my vantage point, I'm critical of sort of the traditional private equity market or model. I think a lot of PE firms, the economics are kind of skewed against the average LP, where these PE firms are charging management fees from their investors, are charging management fee from their portfolio companies. And as a former CEO of a company that was owned by a PE firm, I between you and me, I just didn't find that made sense. And what I would tell you is that oftentimes you could have a portfolio company that wouldn't do well, but the fund would do well because they would average it out over the broader portfolio. And also the partners, if they didn't have capital in it, they have a lot less at stake relative to the outcome. So it's just a long way of saying my brother and I, we truly try to approach. There's a reason why we named our firm Benevolent Capital. We truly take a benevolent approach toward our investments and our LPs. But the sports side of it came in 2014. I was watching a Major League Soccer game, and the commissioner of the league was talking about the cities that they were expanding into, and he didn't mention Phoenix. So I just quickly kind of put my entrepreneurial hat on and said, okay, I want to buy a franchise in Phoenix and call it Phoenix Rising. And long, long story short, I did. There's some twists and turns in there that I'm skipping over. But in short, I bought a USL franchise. I rebranded it to Phoenix Rising. I brought in a world-class group of partners. And it's been truly one of the more successful franchises kind of on and off the pitch over the last 4 years.
Gotcha. Wow, that's great. I know that one biotech firm that you mentioned on your website, Enzymatics.
Yeah, Enzymatics. Yeah.
It's been an incredible home run for you guys.
Yeah, we wish they'd all be like that. I think it was 150x on our initial investment.
Golly.
Better to be lucky than good.
$200,000.
Yeah, my partners deserve a disproportionate amount of credit. These are some of my partners down in Virginia, Charlottesville, but they were approached by a friend of theirs who had the initial kind of idea, and we put up some of the first seed capital into it. And it's just, you know, the gift that keeps on giving, and was ultimately acquired earlier this year, or maybe it was late last year, by Invitae, a big, big publicly traded biotech company. And anyway, it's been fantastic. And I've been using the proceeds of my gains from that to feed my opportunity zone businesses. So, you know, it's a positive virtuous cycle relative to the way I view that program is set up, is when investors like myself come into capital gains and now want to amplify it and really kind of leverage that positivity, you know, roll it into an opportunity zone program. And I'm putting my sports teams, you know, the Rhode Island is a perfect example. I'm taking that business, the sports business, that franchise, which is going to appreciate considerably over the next decade. And that's going to be in an opportunity zone, and it'll be an opportunity zone business. There's a lot of real estate deals in the OZB space. There's not a lot of business platforms in the OZB space. So that's where a lot of investors have resonated with my approach, because you just can't find an asset that's going to appreciate like a sports team will.
Yeah, definitely. And they generate revenue. I mean, obviously, hopefully they generate revenue.
They generate revenue, especially in the league that I spent, you know, United Soccer League, USL, at a 15,000 seat stadium. So the stadium that's behind me, with our average ticket price, with our payroll, with our merchandise, our sponsorship, we'll stabilize and be cash flow positive. And then there are a lot of things driving the growth of soccer, including there are a lot of foreign clubs that are looking at the United States as a great place to put young talent, young players. So you've got incredibly deep-pocketed foreign clubs that have more talent than they know what to do with. They can't find ways to get them minutes. And increasingly, USL is the league is a fantastic place for them to either affiliate or own a franchise. So I'm beyond bullish in terms of what the kind of future is for every single pyramid, every single level of the soccer pyramid in the United States.
Right. So will you roll them all up and try to sell them all at one time, or not worried about that now? Just trying
to. Not worried about it. Probably not, because I actually think they're probably worth more independently than they are together. You know, I think, and my Tucson franchise and my Phoenix franchise, it's got proximity to Mexico. Mexico is a total powerhouse, obviously, in soccer. If you look at television support and ratings in this country, the Mexican league is the highest of all the soccer consumption. So I think there'd probably be more interest, you know, with those franchises relative to potentially a tie-up or association with Mexico. I think my Rhode Island franchise is a great partner to Ipswich, the club I just bought in England. Ipswich has got an incredible academy. So I'm very keen in a couple of years to take some young talent from Ipswich, bring them to Rhode Island, and start to accelerate their learning curve, their sort of value curve, because they're getting fantastic minutes in a very competitive league. And I think a lot of other foreign clubs are starting to turn on to that potential business plan.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, what a culture you have to build. And I'm sure it's easy to build a good culture around different games and all the different employees and all that, which is awesome. That's great. So what is it that you have on here? What is the attire today? What is that sweatshirt?
This is what do I got? This is FC Tucson. So officially it's in the third division, and it's called League One.
Okay.
And so it's United Soccer League. Tucson's a million plus, you know, market, so it's a fairly sizable market. It's in the southwest part of the United States, which is growing rapidly. So I love the demographic drivers behind Tucson, and I'm working on a downtown stadium, which would be transformative. So in a market like that, I bring a 10 to 15,000 seat stadium. I put my Tucson franchise in that stadium. It'll transform the equity valuation inherent in the club, but it also start to transform Tucson. It's going to give it a significant sports team to get behind. And then I'll feed a lot more sports into that stadium. And I'll develop a bunch of real estate around it, a multifamily. I'll kind of do an economic analysis of the highest and best, food hall, hotel, multifamily, et cetera. So it's what I find with professional soccer is it's a public asset in the sense that the politicians and the community really want to be associated with it, rightly so, because you also have a lot of youth players, boys and girls that are part of the youth programs. And so in general, if you approach it in the appropriate manner, you should be able to get access to land that the average developer doesn't get. And you should be able to get public support that might be better or greater than the average developer get. And again, from my perspective, that's a little bit of what I would call the hallmark of my business plan.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that's great. I mean, it's, you're getting the sports teams to generate. So you're going out, finding the dirt, doing an opportunity zone, getting the best tax base you can for your investors. You're building a stadium. And then the sports teams you're putting in will pay for the stadium, hopefully, or you'll have them playing games or practicing or whatever inside the stadium. But then also having other outside groups or outside revenue for that. Like, I mean, the Texas Rangers Stadium out here in Arlington now, I mean, they have events out there like 200 days a year. Instead of just 80 games, they have, well, probably 300 days a year. They'll have an event there at that ballpark. So yeah. you're doing the same type thing, which is beautiful. I mean, having the real estate.
Yeah, you need to figure out how to kind of turn the turnstile as much as possible. And so rectangular field stadiums, so you have soccer, both men and women's soccer, American football, rugby, lacrosse, field hockey. And then depending on the market, my East Coast teams will have artificial turf. And right. The reason why that's important is I can actually host a concert there without damaging the field. And so a fair bit of concerts will be programmed in that. If you have natural grass, which the Western, you wouldn't be able to do that because your pitch would get ruined. But anyway, it's all about kind of trying to figure out how to program as much as possible. But the soccer team becomes a driver and an anchor tenant in that stadium. And then again, creating a district where people want to live, they want to work, they want to play, they want to eat, they want to stay. And it really starts to transform the broader community. But from my perspective, Jay, I'll take location any day over any other OZ program. I always joke that if I ever write a book on my journey in professional sports, it's going to be the shortest book in the industry. It's location, location, location. That's
also my thing. Man, it's like having the airport in Denver or whatever. I mean, it's like they probably got a great deal on that land, but even if they gave it to them, it is so far away from the downtown area anywhere. Like, how can this be fun? You know, and also too, flying into Phoenix, going to training camps for baseball. I mean, you're in there for forever, it seems like. You know, but they got a good deal on that land, I guess, somewhere. But you're right. I agree with you.
Look, we were talking earlier about hockey. The hockey franchise in Phoenix got a deal in Glendale, and you know, they've really struggled in that market. And so you got to be careful what you wish for, because again, at the end of the day, you can get some incentives, you can get a great deal on a stadium, but if it's the wrong side of town, it's really tough to kind of give tickets away.
Right. Hey, good. Well, hey, I want to ask you a couple more questions. So what would you tell your 20-year-old self? If you're going back and you're going, oh man, hey, I wish I'd done this different. Or is there one thing in particular that you can look back and go, man, I should have gone into private equity longer, or I should have never gone in there. I should have never gone to Brown. No, I'm just kidding. You'll never say that. But what is there anything in particular that you tell yourself?
No, good question. I actually had almost a perfect example where a friend of the family's in his early 20s been reaching out for career advice, and he's kind of finding himself in a finance/Wall Street job and not particularly happy with it. But I'm trying to explain to him that, like, I think in every arc of a career, first and foremost, you have to go through periods of time where you're not happy. You got to kind of suffer, if you will. You got to work hard. You got to pay your dues. You got to be, you know, that sort of forges the emotional intelligence, the fortitude that you need later on. What I'm very pleased about the arc of my career is, in the prior life, I was kind of a big company guy. I ran and operated fairly sizable, you know, global businesses. Now I am 100% entrepreneur. If I don't run quicker every day, I don't get to put food on my table. And that's a significant shift. I long for the days that I had a very healthy W-2, But all that being said, I wouldn't trade what I do now for all the, you know, the biggest paycheck in the world, if you will, because I love what I do. I love the people I get to choose to work with. I love the projects that I get to take on. And if they succeed or fail, they're largely as a result of my hard work, my perseverance, my optimism, my risk taking. So I think at some point people need to understand where they fall on that spectrum, because what I know is entrepreneurship is not for the faint of heart. You absolutely, as an entrepreneur, you have to taste some really scary moments, those primal screams in the middle of the night that you kind of, you wake up, you hope you didn't wake your wife up, because then she's going to want to know what's wrong. But from my perspective, you know, again, I think not everyone's cut out for an entrepreneur. I had very early in my entrepreneurial stint, I had some very, very dark days. I had to go deep on my finances. I had to put another mortgage on my house. I literally maxed out every credit card I had. But I traded through it. It makes me truly reverent for where I am today, and totally with total humility about where I am today. So long answer, but my advice to young individuals is to try to figure out, are you a company person or are you an entrepreneur? And if you think you're an entrepreneur, then take some baby steps. Don't bet the world on it. And that's where the benefit of being young, if you will. But then also throughout the arc of a career, you don't know where the path is leading ultimately. And that's where I think over time, if you're in a situation that's not great, you probably should stick it out for a little bit. Some what I call, you probably have to put a year or two in so that you're not perceived as someone who the first sign of trouble or adversity kind of just sits there and kind of pulls the plug and says, what do I do now? Because at some point then, as someone who might look at hiring you, I kind of sit there and say, look, I just don't know if the going gets tough, you're going to be the first one out the door.
Right. No, that's great. I mean, that's what I like about Eagle Scouts, or I like about, because you stuck it out. I mean, whatever happened, college, I mean, you stuck it out. I mean, it's like you finished, you started something and you finished, which is good. Of course, you won't tell Bill Gates that. I mean, he dropped out of Harvard, right, or whatever. So, the richest man in the world. Heard an interview about him the other night. I loved hearing his voice and hearing all the different things that he has. You know, it's a great, great guy, great, super. Okay, well, hey, what about this? What about, what would it look like 5 years from now? Tell me about what does Brett Johnson look like 5 years from now?
Yeah, I think I'll hold a lot more professional soccer teams. I'm looking to acquire one in Australia. I'm confident we'll kind of, what they describe, pick up a passport club. So one on the continent of Europe. I'm confident that my sort of diverse real estate portfolio will be substantially further along. And what I like about what I'm putting forward is that there are a lot more things you can program into it. You know, so I'm going to diversify into sort of additional sports investments, e-gaming, e-sports, food halls. I'll probably get into some hospitality, maybe some type of partnership on hotels, et cetera. But, you know, the future is really exciting. Every day, it's not kind of something, some door opens up in terms of potential partnerships. I have to be a little careful in terms of how I filter it, because there's only so many hours in a given day. And I got to kind of make sure I block and tackle on my core projects right now. But I'm beyond excited what the next 5 years will bring. Next 10 years, just have to keep putting my right foot after the left foot and make good things happen. And from that perspective, would be honored to be on your show at any kind of future date to try to check in and see how all these things are checking out, tracking.
That's exactly right. We definitely need to check in every quarter, every year, every 6 months, whatever, just kind of check back. But you know what I've always heard is, you know, if you have sports teams and you have real estate, you also need an oil and gas portfolio. So we need to work on that as well. I mean, okay. That's all the blend. I mean, I don't know, but that's the pie chart.
That's great. I like it.
But I do want to have you back on. I want to check into this. Now, how do people find your sports team?
Yeah, my benevolentcapital.com.
Benevolent.
Here's what I tell you: you can find me on LinkedIn, Brett Johnson on LinkedIn.
Brett Johnson on LinkedIn.
Yeah, and then
that's different sports teams. He's going to grow one or two a year, I'm assuming. Is that your goal, or do you have a goal? Or
yeah, I know. I mean, again, at some point, I have to be careful because there are limits to how many different clubs I'd want to have an interest in. And kind of like the balance of the portfolio right now. I welcome hearing from any of your listeners. I'm really honored whenever I have the opportunity to talk about what I've been blessed to be involved with personally and professionally. But yeah, LinkedIn's always a good source. I'm increasingly active on Twitter because I own a lot of these sports teams. Ipswich is a very visible global club, and I feel a responsibility to engage with the fan base in a positive sense, to be vocal with them, because that's, I think, one of the many hallmarks. These are assets of the community, and I feel that's an important role that I should play.
That's great. That's great. I remember back in my Texas Ranger days, you can see the kind of the things up here on the wall. But
I want to emulate that. I can't wait.
You can see, and I remember, man, going, okay, well, I got to figure out who's pitching, who's not pitching, who's in our AAA, AA, and it's like, man, there's just so much. There's a lot going on, obviously, and I can't imagine having six teams in all different parts of the world. Because you were looking at one in Australia, your brother's in Connecticut, or he's in in Connecticut. I mean, it's like you have them all over the world, England.
Yeah. I can't watch them all. I've gotten to the point now where I literally have to watch the highlights just because of the time of day that they're on. But I covet Australia because I think at that point I could literally say that the sun doesn't set on one of my soccer clubs. You know?
There you go. I like that a lot. That is really cool.
You're a good man, Jay. I'm really honored. Like I said, I'm thrilled to have joined Tiger 21. I've been interested in it for a while and finally took the leap not too long ago. And to have the opportunity so early in my Tiger tenure to be able to meet someone like you, to get connected with you, and to be able to talk about what we do is a real, real honor. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Brad, I'll tell you what, it's all about relationships. You know, especially at this time of our lives, you know, we're getting older. And because I'm a lot older than you are, but you know, you get older, and all of a sudden you're thinking, man, relationships, and what can you leave? You can leave some money, but you know, kids are going to spend money. I mean, it's like you can try to spend all your time and effort on exactly what you should do. But I got a buddy of mine that's in Tiger. I'm not going to mention his name because he's not giving me the permission to do it. But he goes, dude, when I die, I don't care. My kids can spend every dime, or they can save it. I mean, I don't care. I'm dead, right? So why do I care? And I mean, a lot of good truth to that, because then you wouldn't have to worry about a lot of things. But, you know, in the meantime, while you're alive, I mean, he's building his kids are solid kids. I mean, they're not going to spend all his money, but it's all about relationships, and it's all about caring about people. And it's just about having fun and knowing that I could call you and go, hey, Brett, you know, I have some tickets, or I need some tickets, or man, I'm going to the game, or I'm going over here. And it is so great. If I'm in Tucson, I'm going to call you, and not because I'm a huge fan of yours yet, but I'm going to be after I go. But I'm going to get some tickets and get some stuff sent to me, and man, we're going to be rocking and rolling. But that's all. It's all fun. So that's what life's all about.
No, with pleasure. It would be a pleasure to host you or anyone in any of my clubs. But you know, at the end of the day, it is about legacy, and I really do view this, and I have highlighted it before. I didn't get into it for the ego side of it at all. I actually think if you get into sports for ego, that's a quick way to get burned. And there've been countless very wealthy people who are a lot less wealthy because of they didn't treat it like a business, if you will, or didn't recognize how it can spit you out. But I really treat every single day in terms of how do I make these franchises more valuable, not only in terms of equity value, but in terms of the community. What's the legacy that they're imparting? And that's why it's important that the youth component be such a strong connection with these clubs, getting kids off the couch, getting moving, teaching them life lessons. A lot of them aren't going pro, but teaching them life lessons when they're in your orbit, if you will. But anyway, I hope it comes across. I truly feel blessed by everything I get to do, by the people I get to associate with, like you, and to be able to work with, and doing my little part to make it a little bit better with everything that I'm involved with every single day. And that's what we all got to do.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. And I'd love to meet your brother sometime. And yeah,
we'll get you guys connected at some
point. Yeah. Hey, let's go to a game. We'll meet halfway. Let's go to a game in Tucson or something. That'd be awesome.
You got it.
Hey, everybody. Well, thank you so much, Brett, for being on today. I'll tell you what, guys, this incredible guy. These are the kind of guys that we bring into these shows. Is talk about, hey, you know what? Hey, you've made it. You scaled it, a business. You sold it. Now you're doing something that you want to leave your legacy, and you want to have some good relationships. So that's what this is all about, is having relationships and having fun in life and doing you know, what you want, when you want, and who you want to do it with, right? So, Brett, thanks so much for coming on. And everybody, have a great day. Have a great – and we're going to see you next week. So stay tuned, and thank you so much.